Katie.
I'm Erica.
And this is Book Talk.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, Erica.
Welcome to Book Talk, your weekly podcast book club. This is the second section of Careless by Kirsty Capes, and we are laughing, but this section was not too much to laugh about. Katie.
We're only laughing at ourselves and definitely not at this section.
Yeah, which it's going to take a turn. Katie, what happened in this section?
So things get worse at home for Bess in this section, and tensions are running super high with her and her foster parents. But things are going really well in the beginning with the boy. Boy and his sister are struggling and almost get evicted before Bess shows up with the $80 they desperately need. After that, things click into place and heat up with Bess and the boy. They are currently sleeping together, and she is definitely falling in love with the older boy. When Henry, her caseworker, finds out just how much older, he gets everyone involved, the parents, school, etc. Esh and Bess had a big fight in the beginning of this section, and they make up here. And Esh gets much closer to entering into an arranged marriage, something that she has accepted but is seriously dreading. Bess falls off the deep end and literally launches herself off of a bridge to try to end her pregnancy, but she comes out fine, just a little flushed and embarrassed. She's a little worse off the next time she tries, but at least she has Esh with her by her side.
And things with the boy are not going well by the end of this section.
They are not going well. So that part has disintegrated, but her and Esh have gotten back together, which in the grand scheme of things seems like a better life decision for Bess, but probably not the one that she wants, which I think we see in this whole section as she's like desperately pining after the boy.
Okay. First thing I want to talk about is what is going on with boy. Do you think he is in another relationship? Do you think he just got scared from like the police, the school involvement? What do you think is going on right now with him?
I don't know. I think boy seems like a lost teenage boy who doesn't know what he wants, who doesn't want to stay when it gets hard, and who's rightfully so freaked out by the situation that he finds himself in with the police and school being involved. Him and his sister live a very precarious existence, as you can see by the fact that they're $80 short on rent. So I don't know if he's thinking that this is just something that he can't deal with right now on top of everything else he's trying to hold together, or thinks it's too much trouble. I don't really think that he's in a relationship with someone else. He seems a little lazy for that. But what do you think?
I don't know. I also agree. He just seems like immature and not able to communicate what's really going on, which might be that he's seeing someone else. It could be that he's just really stressed with helping his sister, managing the household, his job. He definitely has a lot of feelings underneath the surface, which Bess is like desperately trying to access, but he does not seem interested in really letting her in. And it seems like when he comes over to her place, potentially when she gets pregnant, there's some like level of intimacy that they reach that he then immediately runs away from.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a pretty typical teenage boy, like not letting people in, not processing your emotions, running away when things get hard or when there is intimacy. So he might be seeing someone else. I think he's just really young and immature. And it's funny because she is so much younger. But he's also still really young in the grand scheme of things.
Well, men's amygdalas don't develop fully until they're in their 20s.
Truly. So that's what I'm saying. He's just young dumb.
Is it their amygdala or is it their prefrontal? I think it's their prefrontal cortex.
It's actually their prefrontal cortex, but that's okay. It's close enough. I think your amygdala is like your fight or flight, and that shit is definitely developed. I'm actually not even sure of that. Can I call someone in for expertise?
Check the fact check later.
Okay. Who does our fact check?
Nobody.
We don't fact check shit. Okay.
I also am confused in this section by the way Bess's foster parents are acting like she is committing murder. I feel like parents always have the instinct, and I'm sure I would have this instinct too if I had kids, but they always have this instinct to like try and control teenagers and to try and restrict the things that they do. And that just makes it so much worse. Like teenagers need that period of expansion and rebellion and separation from themselves and their parents or their caretakers in this case. And they are just not giving it to her. And then, you know, she stays out like one night and they freak out on her. I feel like they're just not handling Bess in the best way.
I feel like it's got to be so hard to be a parent of teenagers to try to balance that. I'm reading another book now where her dad is not, you know, you're reading this book too, or you read it. Like, her dad's not super involved when she's growing up. Like, he kind of lets her live her life, treats her like an adult at a really young age. And I feel like she kind of struggles with that. Like, I thought I was so grown up and I wasn't. I didn't have anyone like setting those boundaries for me. So I think it's probably like a really delicate balance. I have no idea how you achieve that, because I agree, you need that separation and that rebellion. As a teenager, you have to find your own boundaries. You have to find who you are and what you believe. And I think it's, you do that by making mistakes, and being a parent who loves your kid, watching them do that has got to be really hard. So I think you just overcorrect, right? Something happens and you immediately want to like pull all control in, which just makes it worse. It just means she's going to sneak out. She's not going to tell you. She's going to do it behind your back, which is exactly what Bess does. There's a second part of this, which I think Kiersey Capes was in foster care, left foster care, the author of this book. So I'm interested kind of in her perspective of this part. But there's a lot of like really harsh things that Bess's foster parents say to her, and a lot right underneath the surface. Like the section when she's talking about, why wouldn't they just adopt me? I'm like long-term placement here. And Henry has to awkwardly tell her that's because adoption costs money and foster care pays money. And so there's kind of this, it doesn't feel permanent to her. And I think that part is really sad and hard to deal with. And I'm sure that's probably the story of a lot of kids, a lot of teenagers in foster care. There are obviously really great foster parents who, this is not the story for a lot of people, but I'm sure this is the story for a lot of kids. And I feel like Bess growing up feeling like there's always, her parents always have an out, has got to be really hard. It does not feel like a safe place to be at home.
Bess also has this very teenager attitude, which is like, it's fine, I'm fine, I don't care, it's not a big deal. And as this section goes on, you just want to shake her and be like, this is a very big deal. These things are very big. You need to sort of deal with them. But of course, she can't deal with them. She doesn't know how to deal with them. She's not even really like letting herself feel everything fully. At least that's the way it seems to me. She's got that like, I'm the cool girl, it's fine. Boy doesn't want to talk to me, whatever. I'm pregnant and I don't know what to do about it, whatever. It'll sort of all maybe work itself out, or it'll all be what it will be. And it's only really towards the end of this section where she starts to feel that like claustrophobia of her choices, where, oh my gosh, I'm never going to get out of this town. I'm never going to go to college. I'm never going to make the films that I wanted to make.
Right.
She's finally kind of starting to come to terms with how big of a shit pile she's in, basically.
As somebody who also handled feelings like that as a teenager, maybe as an adult, I understand and feel for her. She's basically just avoiding it because this situation she's in is big. It is a big deal, and it's not a good situation. She doesn't have a way out of it, and there's not an easy option for her. I mean, she's pregnant. She's turning 16. She's really young. She's in foster care. It's not good, and I think deep down she knows that. It's much easier to turn away from it or to run away than to deal with it, especially when you're a teenager and you don't have any skills with how to deal with it. And she doesn't really have a support system either, besides Esh, who's about to be married, and she's 16 also. So I didn't mean to say that so alarmingly. It just seems very young.
Definitely. Esh is also such a good friend, but I'm worried about what's coming. So when we leave, or when we end this section, Esh is trying to help her basically induce a miscarriage at her house, which now she's like blackout drunk, puking all over the place. And it's like the middle of the day at Esh's house. So I feel like her parents are definitely going to find out. They're super religious. I think Esh has sort of resolved to help her friend despite her beliefs, most likely, about the situation. And just love the girl. What a friend. And also, what a pickle they've gotten themselves into.
Truly, what a pickle on both ends here. I feel like Esh has been such a gem of a friend this whole time to Bess, even as Bess pushes her away. They both definitely love and support each other, and I love their friendship, and I'm glad Bess is like being a better friend and realized she was being kind of a shithead. Their parents are definitely going to come home and find Bess, maybe with like her body burned. Like, I'm a little concerned about how hot that water was. she's just chugging gin. I have no idea if this is going to actually induce a pregnancy or a miscarriage for her, but she is not going too well after this. And I can only imagine the repercussions. I wonder how much Esh's parents know about her foster parents or how close they are in real life and if they will immediately run to them or kind of let her sleep it off and handle it herself. They are very religious and seemingly conservative, so it'll be interesting to see how they handle this shit show they're about to walk into.
This book is like filling me with just the dread of being a teenager and realizing you fucked up and that you have no way of fixing it, or the way to fixing it is going to be really difficult. And that sickening feeling, oof, it's tough. It's tough to read.
It is hard to read, and it does bring up all of those feelings of like, oh no, this got really bad. I actually don't know how to control it, and now I have to tell the adults because I am not an adult and I don't know what to do. I think that Kiersey does a really good job of bringing that out in you. Like, you can picture whatever situation you were in as a teenager and how it felt to have to at some point face it or own up to it. And she does, I think, a really good job of capturing these teenagers' thoughts and feelings, even though she herself is not a teenager. How are you feeling about the writing style or kind of the writing so far in this book? We're about halfway through. Do you like it? What do you think?
It's definitely cringe. It's cringy in like the way of being a teenager is cringy, where you're like, Bess, oh, don't do this. Also, Bess, like, run away. Everyone is telling you correctly that boy is no good, even his sister. But then, of course, as soon as someone's like, they're not lovable, move on, they're not good for you, it just makes you want them more.
You're like, I'll fix there. It. Don't worry.
Exactly. I see him the way that none of you do, but actually everybody else is pretty correct.
If that isn't the teenage, that's it. You're like, no, I see it and he sees me. And so I'm the one who can change him, the only one who can get close. You're like, that shit is a lie, but you're 16 and you just don't know. Bess.
It's also very plainly written, I think, as a book, because Bess is a teenager. So we're sort of hearing it from her perspective. And again, with like her refusal to acknowledge what's really happening and how serious it is. So I think it's a little bit more restrained maybe than other books and less sort of like poetic. But that's sort of how Bess is. Bess is very like upfront, honest, sort of in your face and kind of like apathetic. And I think we're starting to see that crack. But
yeah,
I think I'm enjoying it, but it's definitely a tough read. I would read it much faster if we weren't reading it for the podcast, just to figure out what to do. What are they going to do? How is she going to get out of this?
I agree. I think that the narrator sounds very authentic to how I picture Bess and how I picture teenage Bess. So I do feel like the writing feels a little bit restrained, but in a genuine way. Does the no quotes bother you at all? The fact that they're talking back and forth with no quotations?
I mean, I'm a Sally Rooney stan, so no. Oh. I'm adaptable.
I don't understand. Maybe you can explain this to me as a Sally Rooney stan. I have read Sally Rooney and I didn't love it. I liked it, so I didn't read another one of hers. But what is, I understand it's like an artistic choice. What is the point of it? Do you know?
I think it's to show, you know, this is just my guess. I think it shows how your thoughts can be just as loud as what other people are literally saying to you. It's sort of all in the same level of attention, basically. Like, the narrator's thoughts, the narrator's perspective, and what other people are saying are at sort of like the same tone. And it also gives you that feeling of like, what did they say? Is that happening? Was that in her head? I think it's a little bit disorienting, and I think authors like that. But it can be frustrating as a reader.
Yeah, I think it's a stylistic choice. I do find it frustrating as a reader because I do think sometimes it gets a little bit disorienting. Like, I'm like, wait, is she thinking that, saying that, or is that something that happened and you don't really know? So I think it makes you maybe slow down and think about it a little bit more. I also think it clearly calls out when she says something like, she'll say a sentence like, I thought that, but I didn't say it out loud. And you don't really know that at the time. So you're kind of misinterpreting it and you have to go back. So I do think it makes you maybe deliberately read a little bit more, but I don't know that I feel fine about it. I feel neutral about it, but I'm sure people have strong opinions if you have not read Sally Rooney or if you love Sally Rooney, who also writes with no quotes. That's like her thing. In case you don't read Sally Rooney and didn't know that.
It's a thing. People love it or hate it.
Yeah. It's so weird. It's like very polarizing for no reason. But overall, I'm liking it so far. And I think that it is a really hard book to read, but I think it also really captures kind of the teenage experience and how hard it can really be.
I unfortunately think it's going to get worse before it gets better. I think based on Esh's parents and what we've seen in this past section, I think they're going to find out and they're going to make Esh end the friendship and take her away. That's my guess.
I mean, I hope that doesn't happen. I don't want them to take Esh away. She's the only good thing in Bess's life right now. But I could see that happening. Her parents seem semi-reasonable. And so I wonder if there could be a shift where maybe they do take care of Bess a little bit, or maybe they do kind of let Esh stay friends with her with boundaries on it in some way. There's something about them that makes me think that they still have soft hearts, even though they're pretty stuck in their ideals.
They're definitely very warm to Bess. I think, though, the influence that she's had on their daughter, they do not appreciate.
I'm curious about this storyline with Esh. I think that she has a lot of admiration for her parents, and she is very grateful for all they've done for her and all they've given up for her. And so she has accepted that the repayment for that is essentially going along with an arranged marriage that she doesn't want to go along with, that she's dreading entering into. What do you think is going to happen with that storyline? Do you think that that's going to end up being the end result for Esh?
I don't know if Esh is dreading it. I think she is resigned to it. I think she's surprised at how quickly it's happening, but she seems also like defensive of this part of her sort of culture, and that like this is the way it was always going to be. And I think it also shows how insular and selfish Bess is, because she's like, well, don't you want more? Don't you want to be in love? And Esh is like, dude, not helping. Like, see it from my side. And she's like, I didn't even think you cared about this Muslim stuff. And she's like, yes, I care about it. I believe it really deeply. Like, this is a big part of my life. And you've basically just never asked.
That part did make me sad for Esh, feeling like she's probably also feeling really alone. And I think that obviously over time, as we discussed last time, you learn to be a better friend to your people. And teenagers are sometimes really not good at it. And Bess is like very almost unaware of how shitty of a friend she's being. And it's kind of being shoved back in her face now. Like, you didn't ask. And she does feel like rightfully guilty during those moments. And I think a lot of people can probably relate to that as well. Just like you're learning how to be a good friend as you're growing up. Some people are better at it than others. People have to learn some hard lessons, which I think Bess is doing through this friendship right now.
Mm. Oof. Also, don't miss that part of being a person in the world. I was going to say a teenager, and then I was like,
dot, dot, dot.
Yikes. Okay, well, I'm like excited and terrified to keep reading.
Yeah, I cannot wait to see what our girls do, how they get themselves out of this little situation that they are in this bathtub. We'll see you next week for section 3.
Talk, talk.
Talk, talk.
Tell me all about the books that you've read. Have you read books? I have read books. Okay.
Yeah, I read
books. Hit me with them.
I read a book, which I think now I might be sure that it is a young adult novel. And you know, this happens to me like once a quarter where I read a book and I'm like, was that a YA book? I don't know. This book said, if you love The Devil Wears Prada, you'll love this book. And that's always disappointing for me when they're like, if you love Crazy Rich Asians, you'll love this book. And it just never lives up to these like silly movies that I love. So I read 100 Other Girls. It's like a very progressive version of The Devil Wears Prada. I do think I talked about the main character is a non-binary character. They're working at a culture magazine and it's like digital versus print. But there's a lot of, you know, kind of self-discovery. The main characters are all in their early 20s. They're figuring out their careers, their lives, who they love. Our main character also is kind of figuring out who she is in her culture and with her sister. So it was cute. It was cute. It was an easy read. It was fine. Then I was on vacation with my girlfriends and we all read a book in a day and we all read a Colleen Hoover. Well, that's not true. On the first day, one read an Emily Henry because, you know, we are nothing if not predictable. So this Colleen Hoover, I read Regretting You. It's about a mother and daughter. The mom has her daughter at a really young age and basically spends her whole early adulthood trying to prevent Clara, her daughter, from making the same mistakes. The only person who can really bring peace to this dynamic is her husband, Chris. And that Chris, the peace is shattered when Chris is involved in a fatal car accident. That is also pretty questionable. And then from here, we're basically dealing with the consequences of this accident and of Chris's decisions. I felt the same way about this book that I feel really about all Colleen Hoover books, which is that they are an experience to read. If you have a plane ride you're anxious about, or you have a friend who doesn't really like to read, give them a Colleen Hoover book. They won't be able to put it down, and it definitely can get you back into the habit of reading. But I personally, and this is an unpopular opinion, feel like her books lack a little bit of depth and like development. Like, I'm always wanting more from them. I also don't feel like I'm really like learning or growing as a person. And you know that I don't believe you have to read every book to be growing and learning. Like, I think you can read for different experiences. I just think for me, Colleen Hoover falls very strongly in that camp. Like, this is an experience to read, and it's usually you can't put it down, you don't know what's going to happen, but they're never my favorite books. You have any coho thoughts before I move on to the next one?
It reminds me of like a really good, not rom-com, but like a really enjoyable movie that's like not that deep, but you're like, I had a great time. Do I want to dissect the plot? Am I going to remember the plot of Avatar 2.5 years later? No, I don't. Could not tell you a single detail. There was a tree. I don't know. They plugged into it. That's all I got.
I didn't even remember
but
that.
It was fun. It was enjoyable. That's like, I think that's generally how I feel about it.
The thing I find funny about the Colleen Hoover books, particularly because the other two girls I was with read Verity and It Ends With Us, which are the other two that I've read of hers. Colleen Hoover's books are like that. They're like an enjoyable experience, but they are fucking dark. Like, they are not right. An enjoyable, like, surface level experience. You are going to read about some shit and it is like terrifying and sad and scary and grieving and all of the emotions. So it is interesting, but that's how I feel with them as well, except for that they are also super dark. All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
The last book I read is Circe. Is that what we decided? Circe?
I think it's Circsa, but I say Circe.
All right. Well, Circe is the book I finished. This is by the same author who wrote Song of Achilles. I think I did myself a little bit of a disservice with this book in that I read the first 50 pages because I was reading it with a friend. Then I read three full other books, and then I picked it back up again at page like 75. And it took a little while to get back into it. I think that's my own fault for reading it pretty spread out in the beginning, the first two kind of sections of it. I do feel like it took a little bit longer to pick up and to really get me into the spell of it than Song of Achilles did. I think I did like Song of Achilles better, but I still thought this book was amazing. I love the worlds that Madeline Miller creates. I love the exploration of the mortals and gods and the mythology. It's something every time I'm like, am I going to like this? Am I going to get into it? And every time I love it. So I loved the end of this book and the whole experience of reading it.
Yeah, I liked Circe a lot. I'm really excited about Madeline Miller's writing a book about Persephone. And I'm love Greek mythology. I was just talking to James about it today because you read Olympus, Texas. And he was like, it's so like obvious what she's doing with the characters. And I was like, what are they doing with the characters? Katie didn't tell me anything about this. She was like, it's a fun like family story. He was like, you know, the mom's name is June, like Juno. And I was like, no one would have made that connection, James. People are not on that level.
No. And like Artie, I think you know Artie, who a tragedy happens to Artie, and it is similar to the tragedy happens to Artemis. Yes.
Yeah.
So like already the girl sense. In the book, you know what I mean? So like, but again, I didn't know that. And I picked up that book. I wonder, David Beakley, if you're listening to this podcast, did you know and not tell me that it was a Greek mythology book? What I like about Madeline Miller's book is I feel like she does justice to how fantastical and magical Greek mythology feels. And I'm not a big Greek mythology person. I obviously don't know a lot about it. I read a whole book and didn't know, but I think that her books feel like truly escapist and also above kind of reasoning and how it happens. And I really enjoy them. Olympus, Texas, she basically is taking this Greek mythology and using it to write a novel. And it definitely feels different. I liked both of the books, but it's not the same, I would say, this Stacey Swann and Madeline Miller at all.
James was like, well, obviously it's a Greek mythology book. Olympus, Texas is not a real place. And one of the characters like runs a graveyard. So it's obviously Hades. I'm like, okay, James, no one would know that.
Literally. I had no idea Olympus, Texas wasn't real. Also, people make up towns literally all the time. But I do now when I read about it today, I Googled it and it was like, well, the one brother runs a junkyard. And so in the story, he owns a body shop. And I'm like, so she just literally copied the stories.
Yes.
It's interesting.
Interesting. But I still want to read it. James is currently reading it. So now I'm interested. And you liked it without even knowing.
I did like it. That's what I'm saying. I think when you read a Madeline Miller, you know that you're reading a book based on Greek mythology. Right. And you feel like you're in that world. When you read Olympus, Texas, I can see how you might be able to guess some of the plot, or maybe you feel more deeply for the characters, understanding they're a part of this mythology. But I think you can enjoy it as a standalone novel.
Okay. Good to know.
And then currently I'm reading, well, Jason's friend Joe asked me to read, he said he wanted to read his first Toni Morrison book and asked if I'd read it with him. So we're going to read Beloved. I've never read a Toni Morrison book. I know.
Love Toni.
So we're going to read that together. And then I'm also reading This Time Tomorrow by Emma Straub. I just love Emma Straub and I'm loving this book so far. Are you reading it also? Or are you done?
Perfect segue. That is one of the books I finished this past week, Emma Straub's This Time Tomorrow. I loved it so much, I immediately bought it and sent it to you. I love how Emma Straub is able to create sort of like a safe world, like a rom-com world or a romance book world, but about like a family, like a cute family dynamic where there's still like drama, there's things happening. This book's like sci-fi adjacent, and yet it's sort of very heartwarming and wholesome and not in like a cheesy way. I loved, so This Time Tomorrow is about a father and a daughter and growing up and wondering how their relationship could be different, how their lives could be different, and sort of connecting with each other as adults, as teenagers, and back and forth. I loved it. Towards the end, I was really crying. I do think it takes a little bit to get going. This is sort of like you kind of want to be a fast reader to sort of get to the interesting parts of the book. But I really liked it. I think you'll really like it by the end.
Oh, I'm halfway through and I'm loving it. I think her writing is exactly as you said. I think it's approachable and also still able to be emotional. And I think that is a fine balance to be able to strike. I love her writing and I love this book. I can't wait to finish it. I'm sure I'm going to cry.
Ugh. Oh, yes. Just have the tissues prepared. I also finished Bones and All, which I got from the library because it's being made into a movie starring Timothy Chalamet or Chablagu, depending on how you like to pronounce his last name.
Okay. I don't even know who that
is. You know who Timothy Chalamet is.
This happens to me like every time you say a reference and then I'm like,
the boy.
No. Okay, hold on.
He's from Call Me By Your Name. And Dune.
Well, unfortunately, I haven't seen that movie and I know Don't Hate Me.
Ooh. Well, you can't see it now because Armie Hammer's, well, speaking of this book.
Wait, what?
We'll circle back.
Okay. I mean, I think I need to watch it though.
Okay, watch it and then we can talk about it afterwards.
Okay.
Don't Google anything Armie Hammer related.
Okay. Okay, I won't, and I'll watch the movie tonight or tomorrow night, and I won't do it tonight because I have a lot of shit to do, but I will do it tomorrow night and then I'll let you know.
Okay. Do you know who Timothy Chalamet is now?
Yeah, but I wouldn't have.
Okay.
But I do now, and it's starring him, so that's why you read it.
It's going to be made into a movie, so I read the book. It is about, it's sort of a magical realism world where there are these people who are cannibals who are like love to eat people, but somehow are able to like completely eat an entire person, bones and all, as the title suggests. And it's the story of this woman, girl, as she's growing up, reckoning with this side of herself and trying to figure herself out. It was fine. I think it's going to be quite a grotesque movie. I don't know. It was okay.
Read that. It sounds pretty gory and terrifying.
Very gory, very terrifying. But I enjoyed it. I mean, we love a dark book in the summertime that I could read on the beach, and that's exactly what I did. And then I'm currently
if that's not a beach book. What is?
I mean, I love a body horror. I was just talking to someone else about this. I don't mind. Like, body horror does not freak me out. I don't know why. Probably because I meditate on the fact that, like, you know, skin is the only thing separating my muscles from the air. I don't know. I have weird body stuff.
I have so many questions, but just go ahead and move on to the next book.
Okay, I can't even remember what it's called. Oh. The book I'm currently reading right now is called Boy Parts. I saw this book all over Book Talk. Guys, it's really kind of fucked up. It's like a party girl in London, but she takes like erotic pictures of men, like consensually. And so she's like an erotic photographer, but she's sort of like a mess. And she's like mean to her friends. And I don't know.
But you love a fucked up narrator who's also kind of gross.
There's something, there's an edge here that I'm not loving.
Okay.
So far, I think it's the, like, clearly someone who's had a lot of trauma who's then sort of trying to work it out in a maybe not healthy way.
Okay.
I'm not
That's
sure.
Fair.
We'll see. We'll see. I'm only like a quarter of the way through it. So we'll see where it goes.
Okay. We shall see. I can't wait to go finish my Emma Straub book now.
Oh, you're going to love it. Okay. Bye.
See you next week.
Book Talk is made by me, Erica Bailey, and Katie Cheney, with production support from Dan White. Our theme music is by Dan White. We'll see you next week.
In this section, things get worse for... Oh, you know what? Sorry. My window's open.
Oh, my God. Wow. Unbelievable.
Okay. Sorry. At least I realized it literally right then. Can you imagine if we were halfway through and you had to edit out crickets? Okay. I mean, I don't know if you can't edit out crickets, but whatever.
I would... Yeah, I don't know what I would do. Okay. Ready?
Kill me. Send me a hateful passive-aggressive text later. Yeah, let's do it again.
I'd be like, crickets? Question mark, question mark, question mark.
And I would be like, no!